The second chapter from the first verse. There is so much more we could profitably look at in chapter 1, but I feel we must move on. There is the question of Jonah's guilt. Why did Jonah tell the men on the ship that he was running away from the presence of the Lord? Surely that was a very bold thing of Jonah to do in chapter 1 and verse 10. The men were exceedingly afraid and said to him, "What is this that you have done?" For the men knew that Jonah was fleeing from the presence of the Lord because he had told them. Seems an incredible thing for Jonah to have done. Was he trying to assuage the guilt from his conscience, like Lady Macbeth walking the floors through the night, rubbing her hands together and trying to wash the stain of the king's blood from off her hands? Out, out, damned spot. Is that why Jonah told the sailors he was running away from God? Was he trying to get rid of his guilt? And then in verse 16 of chapter 1, there is this marvelous verse which teaches us how the sailors on the ship were converted. In fact, it seems that everyone in this book is getting converted except the prophet Jonah. For when he preached, the whole city of Nineveh turned from its sins to the living God. And Jonah was very angry. And here in verse 16, the sailors turned to God. Then the men feared the Lord exceedingly, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. How strange a thing it is that all throughout history, very often, it is the outsiders who turn to God, while the insiders have the least time for him. The men feared the Lord exceedingly, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. But we move on to chapter 2 and verse 1. Jonah is now inside the fish at the bottom of the sea. He is therefore in a very embarrassing position. Then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish, saying, "I called to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me." That's a strange tense there. It really is the prophetic past. He's still inside the fish, but he says that God has already answered him. The prophetic past. Out of the belly of Sheol, that's one of the Old Testament words for the grave, out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and thou didst hear my voice. Again, the prophetic past. For thou didst cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the flood was round about me. All thy waves and thy billows passed over me. He's beginning to learn his lesson. They are God's waves and God's billows. He is at the bottom of God's sea. He is trapped inside God's fish. He's beginning to learn the lesson. All thy waves and thy billows have passed over me. Then I said, I am cast out from thy presence. How shall I again look upon thy holy temple? The waters closed in over me. The deep was round about me. Weeds were wrapped about my head at the roots of the mountains. I went down to the land whose bars closed upon me forever. And yet thou didst bring up my life from the pit. That's another Old Testament word for the grave. Thou didst bring up my life from the pit, O Lord my God. When my soul fainted within me, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came to thee into thy holy temple. Those who pay regard to vain idols forsake their true loyalty, but I with the voice of thanksgiving will sacrifice to thee. What I have vowed, I will pay. Deliverance belongs to the Lord. And the Lord spoke to the fish, and it vomited out Jonah upon the dry land. Amen. May God bless the reading of His word. To His name be the praise and the glory. I want to look with you this morning at this extraordinary part of the story of Jonah, which tells us that while he was inside the belly of the fish, our reluctant evangelist sang a song. He wrote a poem in the belly of the fish. And that poem, it's really a psalm of affliction and deliverance, is the second chapter of Jonah. Now I ask you, do you see Jonah's problem? I mean, what would you do if you found yourself in the belly of a fish at the bottom of the sea? It's God's fish, and it's God's sea. The waves are God's waves. And so I ask you, what would you do if you found yourself inside the belly of a fish at the bottom of the sea? I dare say that most of us would start complaining. The trouble is, you see, that if you find yourself in that position, all your comforts have gone. There are no telephones inside fish at the bottom of the sea, and so you can't ring up your friends for a word of comfort. There are no television sets in fish at the bottom of the sea, and so you cannot soothe your pain by switching on Sunday night at the Palladium or Stars on Sunday. There are no radios inside fish at the bottom of the sea, and so you can't switch on Radio 1, it's lots of fun, and keep it blaring all the time just to deaden the pain of living. And besides, you've run out of cigarettes. And there are no tobacco shops in fish at the bottom of the sea, nor are there any cocktail cabinets in fish at the bottom of the sea, And so you can't drown your sorrows with alcohol. There's nothing there that you can take or listen to deaden the pain of living. You are there absolutely alone, but you are alone with God. And so I ask you the question again, what would you do if you found yourself in a fish alone with God at the bottom of God's sea? The first lesson that Jonah learned was this, that God had put him there to die. As the whale submerged, and Jonah realized that jaws had closed upon him, Jonah prepared himself for death. You see, Jonah began to realize that he wasn't really inside a fish. He was inside a mortuary. His end had come. And the amusing thing is this, that ever since Jonah had heard the call of God on his life, he had feared death. Jonah was a man who refused death. In fact, he was in the sea because he had refused to die to his churchy pride. He had refused to die to his position as a privileged person. He had refused to die to his unwillingness to evangelize the earth in the name of God. Jonah had been called by God to be an evangelist. Jonah did not want to be an evangelist. And he ran. And he ran because he refused to die to Jonah. I wonder if you noticed how many words in Jonah's poem are words about death. I called to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me, out of the belly of Sheol. Now that's the Old Testament word for the grave. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and thou didst hear my voice, for thou didst cast me into the deep. Now the word deep there is the word that's used in Genesis chapter 1 about the chaos before the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. You remember that great phrase, darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the word there in Hebrew, tahom, it means ruin. It means the abyss of meaninglessness. It means the great primeval ocean, the wickedness before God spoke and God's Spirit brooded on the face of the deep. And Jonah says, this is what has come over me. I have been overwhelmed by meaninglessness. My life has been overtaken by chaos. For thou didst cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the flood was round about me. All thy waves and thy billows have passed over me. And yet thou didst bring up my life from the pit. And that's another Old Testament word for the grave. You see, when God puts people inside fish and sends them to the bottom of the sea. He is telling them that they have to die in order to be reborn. Men and women need to die before they can be reborn as new people. Individuals need to die and be reborn, as Jesus said. Except a man be born again, he cannot see. He is blind. Until he is born twice. And churches too need to die. And fellowships need to die in order to be reborn into the purposes of God. And I tell you, if there is anything that the Church of Scotland needs to die to, it is this appalling spirit of parochialism, little-mindedness, narrow-mindedness, small-mindedness. That is one of the curses of the church today. Where does your religion end? Do you say, oh, my religion's a private affair? It ends with the walls of my heart. It's private. Some people's religion is private to the point of non-existence. They say it's a private affair because there isn't any religion. They don't speak about their religion because they've nothing to speak about. That's where your religion ends, with your heart. Does your religion end with the walls of this church? Is that how far it goes? Are you just interested in what goes on here? Or are you a bit more elastic than that? Does your religion end with the borders of Inverness? Are you interested in what goes on in this town? Christ-wise. Or does it end with the borders of Scotland? Are you not really interested in anything that goes on beyond Scotland or Great Britain or Europe? Why can we not sell 100 world scopes in a congregation this size? Where would we be today if the Apostle Paul thought that his religion should end with the walls of Jerusalem? Where would we be today if Jesus thought that the gospel ended at the borders of Palestine? You see, Worldscope is not a cranky magazine. It's not a freaky thing put out by some way out people who have got a screw in their heads loose about missions. It's a sober, balanced paper. 100 copies. You see, the church needs to die to its parochialism, to its little-mindedness and its narrow-mindedness, in order to be reborn. Into the purposes of God. That's why I sometimes say that many people who are born again need to be born again, again. That's the first thing. When God puts people into fish at the bottom of the sea, His sea, it's in order that they may die. Second great message of chapter 2 of Jonah is this. God's best work has been done in prisons. You see, Jonah is in jail now. He can't get out. I wonder if you noticed how some of God's best men have been in jail, and how some of God's best work has been done with people who are in jail. One thinks automatically of Joseph, who landed in jail because he was being slandered by an evil woman, Potiphar's wife. One thinks of his long, hard years in Pharaoh's jail, years that could quite easily have put iron into Joseph's soul and made him a sour and a bitter man, a twisted man. But in fact, Joseph did not become sour or twisted. He became a new man. And when he came out of jail, his wife had a child, and he called the boy Manasseh. And Manasseh means, "The Lord has caused me to forget." And that was what jail did for Joseph. It made him into a big man. "The Lord has caused me to forget." One of the greatest allegories of the Christian faith, the Pilgrim's Progress, was written in jail in Bedford Prison by John Bunyan. He was sitting in jail when he wrote that book. And do you know the story of the great Samuel Rutherford and what prison did for him? Do you know the story of Samuel Rutherford? He fell foul of Charles II, Charles Stuart. The Stuarts were no credit to Scotland. Charles II, that profane man, had theological opinions like so many other profane people, and he decided that Samuel Rutherford was to be banished. And so Rutherford left his little parish in Annoth, down on the Solway, and he was banished to Aberdeen. Actually, he lived in a house in the Upper Kirkgate, if you know Aberdeen, not far from Marshall College. And when he came to Aberdeen, he didn't care for it at all. Listen to some of Samuel Rutherford's words about Aberdeen. I hope there are no Aberdonians here today. He's writing to Robert Gordon of Knockbreck, a man who was later executed by Charles II, a godly man. The Stuarts were no credit to Scotland, or indeed credits to anywhere else. "Dear brother, grace, mercy, and peace be to you. I am, by God's mercy, come to Aberdeen, the place of my confinement. I find the townsmen cold." You see, as he walked through the streets of Aberdeen, the Aberdonians used to point at him and call him the banished minister, because Charles's curse was on him. "I find the townsmen cold and dry in their kindness, and yet I have found a lodging in the heart of many strangers." People
people were praying for him. I have found a lodging in the heart of many strangers. Now, my dear brother, do not forget me, the prisoner of Christ, for I see very few here in Aberdeen who kindly fear God. Grace be with you. Let my love in Christ and hearty affection be remembered to your kind wife. And you would have thought that the iron would have gone into Rutherford's soul. But later on, he wrote another letter. Much honored and very dear friend, grace, mercy, and peace be to you. I am in good case. Blessed be the Lord, remaining here in this Unker town. Unker means unpleasant, way out. Unker. I am in good case. Blessed be the Lord, remaining here in this Unker town, a prisoner for Christ and his truth. But I am not ashamed of his cross. My soul is comforted with the consolations of his sweet presence, for whom I suffer. I earnestly entreat you to give your honor and authority to Christ. Do not me dismayed at flesh and blood, for while you are for the Lord and for his truth and cause, however, for the moment, we see truth being put to the worse for the time being. And yet Christ is a friend to truth and will do for those who dare hazard all that they have for him and for his glory. And these wonderful words later on, still writing about Aberdeen, and the letter is entitled, His Enjoyment of Christ in Aberdeen. He says, My very honourable and dear ladies, writing to the Viscountess of Kenmure, grace, mercy, and peace be to you. I desire to hear what the Lord is doing with you. I cannot but write to my friends, listen to these words, that Christ hath Christed me in Aberdeen, and my adversaries have sent me here to be feasted with love banquets with my royal, high and princely King Jesus. That's why King Charles sent me to prison, to feast with Jesus Christ. Some of God's best work has been done in jails, but there are many kind of prisons, and here is my last thought. I remember hearing a missionary from Colombia a few years ago. She had gone there to Colombia and watched the heathen Indian boys stealing watches, robbing. She had watched little girls of 10 becoming prostitutes in the bars, and her heart went out to them. But she was in a prison of silence, for she could hardly speak. You see, she had a very bad cleft palate. Her prison was silence. And so she went through 8 operations and taught herself Spanish in order to tell these boys and girls of Christ. And Spanish is not an easy language to learn. It's full of very awkward sounds. La boca de mi pepita es más dulce que un panal. Not easy to say that. That's Spanish. 8 operations. You see, God did something for her in her prison of silence.
that he could not have done anywhere else. There are different kinds of prison. I wonder if somebody here this morning has come to church in the prison of loneliness. God knows how lonely we can be, even in a crowd, even in a family. God knows how isolated we can be. Some have come here in a prison of frustration, for their dreams have been frustrated and come to nothing, and their hopes for life have gone wrong. And maybe somebody has come here this morning in a prison of failure, persistent moral failure. But you see, God's work is sometimes done at its best for those who are in prison. David once said, "The Lord hears the sighing of the prisoners." And it is written of Jesus when he preached his first sermon, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, for he has appointed me to preach deliverance to the captives and the opening of prison to them that are bound." And that is the good news of the gospel for you this morning. Jesus Christ is here. He is here preaching deliverance to those who are captive and the opening of the prison house to those who are bound. Well, are you like Jonah today? You're stuck in a jail, in a fish, underneath God's waves. God has put you there, first of all, to die. And secondly, he has put you there because he wants to do something special with you. Because his most special things are done with people in prisons. And it is in that spirit that we come to Christ's table. Our communion hymn is 451. "Approach, my soul, the mercy seat, where Jesus answers prayer.